It was a tradition among sailors to put a pineapple on their gatepost to announce their return home from sea.
The last album was fun to pull apart, so I just digitized this one an hour ago, and I'm going to start going through it slowly, see what I can pick out.
I'm going now, Johnny. I'm going to the basement of the library.
I have some very unfortunate news. There has been a significant turn of events. I will try to update you chronologically in order of the events as they happened, rather than in the order that I recorded everything. First off, I'm just going to say it. Ricky may have burned down the Barton Public Library. That is Ricky Rawls, my oldest friend. A person I have featured multiple times during this audio project. He was arrested at the scene. He couldn't make bail. From what I understand, he is being held locally, but may be transferred to a larger facility over in Berlin, New Hampshire, because, and this blows my mind, he's being uncooperative and violent. And if you can believe it, that's just the beginning. This is the Disappearance Podcast, Episode 5, Return. If you've been listening for the past few months, then you're well aware that I have a special place in my heart for Richard Rawls of Barton, New Hampshire. To me, he's Ricky. And frankly, beyond my wife Carol, he's my best friend. Another thing I need to share is that I was contacted by a state attorney, and he made it pretty clear that they plan on using this project, my podcast, in the case against Ricky. They believe he's an arson, and that something he said in my last episode will make it easy for them to prove that Ricky's alleged act of arson was planned in advance. From what I can gather, he simply said that he was going to the library basement. Needless to say, I find this all devastating. I wanted to help him, but I didn't know how. I can't believe that he would actually set fire to the Barton Public Library. Why would he do that? I thought about stopping the podcast, effective immediately, but I hope the state attorney is listening right now. Ricky was not talking like himself when I recorded him. If he was involved, then clearly something is very wrong with him. He doesn't deserve prison. He needs help. The one thing he said in his phone call to me that made the least sense was that he needed to find Sally, his girlfriend. I am telling you, straight out, Ricky and I are close. We talk often. We didn't reconnect over this project, like he said in my last episode. We were already connected. And I promise you, Ricky never had a girlfriend named Sally. In the phone call that I played during my last episode, he said he needed to find Sally. I had no idea who he was talking about. Well, that was until I tracked her down. I did it. Here's Sally.
He called me out of the blue. I almost let my phone go to voicemail because I didn't recognize the number. But it was a local number, not just the 603 New Hampshire area code. It was a Barton number, so I figured it must be something. I answered.
That's Sally Robinshire. She's a second grade teacher at Barton Elementary School. As you may have noticed, I'm not speaking to her on the phone. I was right next to her. That's because I've returned to Barton, New Hampshire. I'll speak more on that soon. But once again, here's Sally.
He was upset, but he talked to me like he knew me.
You've never met Ricky.
I knew of him. This is a small town, so yeah, I saw him around town periodically, but he's a complete stranger to me. He was really upset. He said that he was going to come and find me. It was really freaky. He terrified me.
Understandably so.
So what did you do?
I hung up on him, and I called the police. Chief Hawkins himself came over to my place. He said he was going to stick around until his officers found him. Found Richard Rawls to make sure he didn't do anything. Some time went by, and the chief got the call that they had him.
They found Ricky?
Yeah, and then the chief drove off pretty fast, flashing blue lights and all. I was alone again. Strangest night of my life.
From what I can piece together for a timeline, after Ricky called Sally, he called me. That phone call is the one you heard during my last episode. During that call, he said that Sally was going to take care of him. And he snapped at me when I didn't acknowledge who Sally was. As it turns out, Sally was as surprised to find that she was in a relationship with Ricky as I was.
Paint a picture of what you see when you look at me. What will those abstract shapes turn out to be?
After Ricky hung up with me, he seems to have gone to the Barton Public Library. The details of what Ricky may or may not have done at the library are not certain, but I spoke to a woman named Tammy Morlick. She works at the Barton Country Store, directly across the town square from the library. She said that she was getting out of work just after 10 o'clock that night. She was startled to find that the library was ablaze. Here's Tammy.
That whole side of the town square was lit up and there was some yelling.
What do you mean by yelling?
Screaming, hollering. It was all the guy who did it. The police had him pinned to the ground. The roof of the library was lit up. It was smoky and there were two fire trucks and a bunch of police everywhere. I've never seen them in action before. It was like a movie.
Okay. All right. So what happened next?
I watched the police pick the guy up and put him into a patrol car. His hands were behind him, so I guess they cuffed him. He was screaming and kicking the whole way. I've never seen anything like it.
The man kicking and screaming was none other than my best friend, Ricky Rawls.
I need to show that my heart is
I'm going to pause here and tell you how I came to be in Barton to conduct these interviews. After I got that call from Ricky, I contacted his parents. The fact of the matter is that Ricky did not sound, nor was he acting, like himself. Out of respect for my friend, I'm going to keep the conversation I had with his parents private. But I will tell you about the outcomes. First of all, they called me back the next morning to tell me that Ricky had been arrested. They were in shock. Ricky's parents are in Florida. They're both well into their 70s and don't travel very much. They asked if I would go up to Barton and get into their old house. Their immediate concern was for Soda. Soda is Ricky's cat. Like me, they were in shock over Ricky being arrested, and I guess the cat was the thing they focused on. Frankly, they didn't know what to think, other than it might all be a mistake. I spoke to both of them, and they seemed to be dealing with it as well as I could imagine. So ultimately, I agreed to go up to Barton immediately to find the cat. And so I did. I figured that Ricky's house might be involved in the investigation, so I called the Barton police to find out whether or not I would even be allowed in. The thing is that Ricky's house, as it turns out, is still under his parents' ownership. Ricky's father ended up calling Chief Tawkins directly while I was en route. I guess they know each other from back in the day. The police had already searched the place, and it was cleared for me. So here I am. After over a decade of being away, I have returned to Barton, New Hampshire. And I'm sitting in a house next door to my childhood home.
I just can't imagine what must be going through your head right now with everything.
That's my wife, Carol. She stayed home. I called her shortly after I arrived at Ricky's house. I'm not sure why I recorded our conversation. I guess it was my way of making sense of the craziness. It's just what I do. If I go back into audio project mode, then somehow I'm in more control of the situation.
They repainted my old place. They pulled off the shutters too, which is weird. It looks completely different.
And Soda, the cat?
Soda's great. Actually, Soda's sitting on my lap right now. Can you hear him purr? Definitely starved for attention, but healthy otherwise.
So, what are you going to do up there? You said you got 2 days off of work.
Good question. I don't really know. Me coming up here was all such a whirlwind. My goal was to make sure the cat was okay. The cat is fine. I'll try to find a home for him until Ricky's situation is figured out.
You can always bring him back here.
It may come to that. We'll see. I was thinking during the car ride that I might try to record some interviews.
About the disappearance?
I don't know. Maybe. Is that weird? I don't know what else to do. I did get a call from Tom while I was driving.
And what did Tom say?
I told Carol I didn't answer it. I just wasn't ready to explain to Tom what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. I listened to Tom's message again and went to sleep without calling him back. I'm gonna play his message for you right now.
Hey there, John, this is Tom. I finally figured out that record. It was a doozy. The noise floor was really high and there was a lot of wow and flutter. Nothing was consistent. I used an algorithm based on chaos theory to deconvolute the audio. The processing time is consuming, but I'm uncovering things little by little. I'm also reversing the audio. It was backwards again. Anyway, give me a call. We have to talk.
So yeah, I wasn't ready to explore mystery records again. Instead, I drove over to the library the next morning. In fact, I made the following recording on location.
So this is John Herman. I'm standing beside what was once the Barton Public Library. Most of the building's gone, though. There are a few walls remaining, but they are charred. And there are book pages everywhere. Everywhere. They're flapping across the town square. The smell of ash is a little overwhelming. People keep driving by and slowing down and just staring at the remains. A few kids just rode their bikes by and they stopped. And they sort of just stood beside me. And we all just stared into the ash. I asked if they heard anything about what had happened. They said a crazy guy burned the library down. It hurt me to hear them use those words.
After kicking around the charred books for a few minutes, I decided to walk over to the Barton Country Store. that's where I met Tammy Morlick. You heard my interview with her earlier in this episode. On a whim, I asked her if she knew anyone named Sally. It was a crazy reach, but she said she did. Barton is a small town. I shouldn't have been that surprised, but she texted her friend, and lo and behold, it was the Sally Ricky was looking for. The woman in question drove right over to the country store, right then and there. I guess Sally thought that I might be able to explain what the heck happened that night. Unfortunately, I didn't have much to offer. After I recorded all of that, I was admittedly feeling pretty down. So I walked out to Bascom's Bridge. It was there that I recorded my final bit of the day. I'm out here at Bascom's Bridge, imagining Ricky coming here every weekend to fish. I'm also thinking about what it would have been like for me if I, like Ricky, had stayed in Barton. I think things would have been a lot different. I probably would never have connected with Carol again. I mean, sure, we would have met at our 10th reunion, or re-met, but I don't know. I just don't see her wanting to marry a lifelong Barton boy. I wonder what it must have been like to watch the police send divers into the water to search for Alistair's body right here 20 years ago. I am getting a call. It was while I was making that recording that my phone rang again. It was Tom Allegost calling. I know I should have answered it, but again, it was just the wrong moment. I didn't answer, but I listened to the voicemail message he left behind. It was startling to me, and I want you to know that I went back to Ricky's place, and I called Tom right back. I'm still trying to work through what he said to me, and I think I need some time to figure out what I'm going to say to you about it. Regardless, I will play our conversation during my next episode. To tide you over until then, here's the message I received from Tom while standing on Bascom's Bridge.
John, it's Tom again. I spoke to Carol. You have to come home. Something is going on that I can't explain. Please call me immediately.
Until next time, thanks to everyone who has spread the word about this project. Thanks to Tom Allegost, Tammy Morlick, Sally Robinshire, and my wife Carol for making this episode possible. Thanks also to Ben von Wildenhaus, Rudy Sims, Ben Aldrich, and Prom Queen for providing the music. Finally, thanks to Marina Altschiller, Sarah Hart, and Jeremy Murphy for the support. This show is a co-production with Partners in Crime Media. Let's talk soon. Partners in Crime Media.